Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents October 7th, The War Against Hamas Through the Eyes of an Israeli Commando Officer, by Captain Elkanah Kuno Cohen, narrated by Neil Shah. Preface. One of my missions in life is to support and rally the troops who fight for liberty and freedom, patriotic heroes who lay their lives on the line protecting democracy and our Judeo-Christian way of life. Israeli Defense Forces Captain Elkanah Cohen is one of those heroes. His dedication to serving and protecting the people of Israel is remarkable, and his fascinating diary paints a vivid picture of his time fighting Hamas in Gaza. Very few books capture what it's really like to step into a soldier's boots and fight terrorists in an urban landscape. Captain Cohen transports the listener to the battlefield and illustrates the painstaking lengths IDF soldiers go to protect innocent lives, while focusing on their main objective, destroying Hamas. October 7, 2023, changed everything for Israelis and the civilized world. If it weren't for great men like Elkanah Cohen, Israel would be in the hands of the terrorists, and the world would be in greater danger. Mark R. Levin. Introduction. I only started writing this diary on my 8th day of being in Gaza, Monday, November 6th. I realized that this was an extraordinary event. It was a historic moment, and I knew that if I didn't write it down, I probably wouldn't remember most of what I experienced. From that day forward, I made sure to write at every possible moment. When I had no time, I made time. Writing became an inseparable part of the war. At night, when my comrades went to sleep, I stayed up to write. I would carry a notebook and pen in my vest on every mission. When I had no time to write, I would jot down some bullet points and come back to my notebook and elaborate when things calmed down. There were times when writing became my place for venting and processing experiences. At other times, it became a burden, another mission. And I would tell myself, you started this, you gotta finish it. Sometimes, writing meant that I couldn't join my comrades when they sat down together to eat and chat. For me, writing and documenting has great significance. This is because the Swords of Iron War is an integral part of Israel's history, and my generation, the generation that went to fight in Gaza, is another link in the chain that stretches back to the War of Independence. This is the official Israeli name for the war started by Hamas on October 7, 2023. 75 years ago, David Ben-Gurion stood and spoke before the Provisional State Council. Just 2 months after the Declaration of Independence, the official agenda of public representatives was strikingly similar to that of their successors today. They started with questions of salaries in the Israel police and continued with a discussion about the composition of the Supreme Court. But Ben-Gurion's speech was different. He came to deliver a situational assessment of the ongoing War of Independence. He began his address with the similarities and differences between this war and the biblical wars of Israel, and then said, "I hope that the day will come, and it is not far off, when it will be possible to tell the details of the great and wonderful tale of how the Jewish forces, those who fought this battle, were established, organized, equipped, trained, and armed. For now, I will mention just one secret weapon, which, more than anything else, has contributed to our standing and our victories over the past 8 months. It is this: the spirit of the Jew, of the Jewish pioneer and the Jewish soldier, the spirit of vision and faith and devotion, which beats in the hearts of our youth, in the hearts of our inhabitants, and in the heart of our army. Through the strength of this spirit, we have, over the course of 70 years, built souls, the soul of man and of land, and created an economy, culture, and Jewish fortitude. Through this spirit, we have been victorious thus far, and if we encounter a military challenge once again, I believe wholeheartedly that we will prevail." On Saturday, October 7, 2023, we woke up to the sounds of sirens heralding the outbreak of Israel's second War of Independence. The day will come when it will be possible to tell the details of this war, a war which began with an agonizing failure, and which must end with a resounding victory. My war diary, which you are now listening to, is my first attempt at conveying my experiences as a combat soldier in the Gaza Strip. I felt that special spirit of the Israeli soldier, of which David Ben-Gurion spoke, up close, day and night. It is what held us together in moments of uncertainty and of longing, when facing fire and in moments of fear. It manifested itself in the bravery of our dear friends who fell in battle, and in the clenched jaws of those who continued to fight, despite everything. It's the spirit of all those for whom 10-7-23 became a personal ID number that I'm trying to convey in the pages of this diary, so that we may never forget what happened, and even more importantly, so that we may draw the strength from such an experience to build a better and safer future. On Simchat Torah, we redefine the significant and the insignificant, the urgent and the trivial, the essential and the superfluous. When I left Gaza for the first time and looked into the faces of those who fought alongside me, I knew that we were moving from one war to another, from a war of destruction against the enemy to a war of rebuilding, together with our brothers inside Israel. We have a new social contract to write, one which will express our shared vision for the next 70 years. We have a new leadership approach to establish, one which will raise the banner of accountability. We have a new military strategy to formulate, one which will address the very real threats to our lives with honesty and directness. We have a lot of work ahead of us. Writing this diary was the first step of my journey. I hope that listening to it will inspire you to join our collective endeavor. Elkanah Kuno Cohen, Ranana, 2024. October 7th, 2023. Simchat Torah. The previous evening we had eaten the holiday meal at the Betan's house in Ranana, Shiran's family. It had been an extremely long day, and we were utterly exhausted. When we finished the meal, it was obvious that we would stay there to sleep. Our apartment is only a 15-minute walk away, but given our exhaustion, that was 15 minutes too far. We quickly fell asleep on the bed in the guest room, which is inside the safe room. Most houses and apartments in Israel have a reinforced safe room, which is purpose-built to withstand a direct rocket attack. At around 5:30, Shiran woke me up in a panic. Elkanah, I had a nightmare. Hundreds of terrorists infiltrated our town and chased after us, and you couldn't shoot them. In my state of fatigue, I mumbled to her, Shiranush, everything's fine. You have nothing to worry about. But she insisted. I hugged her tightly and said, Shiranush, don't worry. I'm here with you, and nothing will happen to you. I fell asleep again within seconds. At 6:30, I woke up. I struggled to open my eyes when suddenly I realized that we were surrounded by all of Shiran's family members. What now? I asked in my tiredness. It turns out there had been a siren, so everyone rushed into the safe room. In the background, one could hear the never-ending noises of the Iron Dome's interceptions, an Israeli air defense system which intercepts rockets by firing multiple missiles at the incoming projectile, resulting in a loud boom. But I tried not to let the commotion affect me too much, for, after all, the rule famously states that the moment you open your eyes and start talking, your chances of falling asleep decrease drastically. I turned over in bed, hugged Shiran, and continued to sleep. At around 7:30, I woke up again. I rubbed my eyes to check that I wasn't dreaming and that there were indeed the sounds of more sirens and interceptions. I don't normally get worked up by such things because, unfortunately, we live in a country where this has become routine. But usually, each round comes after a specific incident. As far as I was aware, nothing had happened before the holiday started, so there was no reason that something unusual should start. and numerous missile launches towards the center of the country is undoubtedly unusual. I understood we were dealing with something serious. This time, I woke up and ran home to turn on my phone to check if something had happened and if I was needed. I arranged with Shiran to meet at the synagogue, because after all, we had no doubt that the prayer services and the hakafot would be proceeding as usual, a ritual performed on Simchat Torah, a holiday which celebrates completing the year-long Torah reading cycle, where Torahs are paraded around the synagogue in a celebratory fashion. I ran as fast as I could, dressed in my Shabbat pants, a knit shirt, and flip-flops. On the way, I passed people on the street with frightened looks in their eyes. I asked them if they knew what happened, and they replied that they had heard there was lots of chaos in the south. There was a feeling of war, even when we knew nothing. Something about Shiran's dream, the sirens, and the general foreboding atmosphere pushed me to run faster. When I arrived home, I called Yossi, the deputy commander of the commando brigade. I don't have a combat role in my regular reserve duty, but rather I'm responsible for helping combat soldiers to process their experiences and for overseeing tryouts for the commando brigade. So I don't belong to any unit that would be called up during war. But it was clear to me that if a war broke out, I would find a way to participate. And I waited for Yossi to answer. "Hey, Kuno, how are you?" he asks, and I cut him off. "Yossi, I have no idea what's going on right now in the South. I haven't seen the news or anything, but know that I'm joining you. If you need a combat soldier, I'll be there." Yossi responds, "Listen, Kuno, I also have no idea what's going on there right now. Get your gear ready and I'll let you know as soon as I have more details. Thanks for calling." I hadn't even hung up the call when I received a call from Gabi, a friend who had been with me in my unit and who now served with Shiran. "Kuno, get me Shiran. We need her in the unit." "What happened?" I asked him. "Kuno, it's terrible. There are trucks of terrorists in Sderot. They've kidnapped a soldier." I couldn't believe it. Kidnapped a soldier? I promised Gabi that as soon as I got my equipment in order, I'd pick up Shiran. Organizing my equipment, I heard knocks on the door and I shouted, "Yes," while taking care to fill my hydration pack. Dolev came in. He looks at me and laughs. "What happened to you? Have you gone crazy? What are you doing?" Our living room was covered in uniforms, military equipment, magazines, and anything that might come in useful in combat. Dolev and I have a tradition. Every Shabbat or holiday morning, we meet at my place for an iced coffee and a good cake that we make sure to bake in advance. He laughs, and I laugh. "Do you really have no idea, Doli?" I was sure he was joking around. "Are you going to tell me what's going on?" he asks, and I realize he's serious. "Listen to me, Dolev. They're talking about war. Didn't you hear the Iron Dome interceptions this morning?" "What interceptions? I slept like a baby." "There were loads," I tell him, without mentioning that if Shiran's family hadn't woken me up, I probably would have still been asleep. "Basically, get ready. We're headed for war. They've also called up Shiran." I finished packing and, as always, prepared us each an iced coffee and a thick slice of yeast cake that Shiran baked. After we finished eating and drinking, we wished each other luck. Dolev serves in one of the operational teams in Maglan, an elite commando unit, and it was only a matter of time before they'd call him, too. We concluded, "Until the next coffee." We got up and hugged. I put on my uniform, took my gun, and drove to the synagogue. When I arrived, I left the car running and ran to the women's section. Some of the women started crying and getting emotional, and I could hear wishes of "May God watch over you" all around. I explained the situation to Shiran and told her that we'd been called up, and that we needed to get to the unit as fast as possible. In the synagogue, they were in the middle of the holiday Torah reading for Simchat Torah. I stood on the side, prayed quickly, and got ready to leave. Everyone blessed us that we may go in peace and return in peace. We parted from Shiran's family with a big hug. Seeing how hard it was for Galia, Shiran's mother, I have to admit that I was filled with some pride. Here we are, a couple going together to reserve duty. There's something touching and special about it. Shiran quickly prepared her equipment, and we were on our way. It's a strange feeling, driving in a car together during a holiday and Shabbat. Looking back, I can say that in the months that followed, observing Shabbat became a strange feeling in general. In any case, we moved towards the Duv Devan Army Base, an elite commando unit. When we arrived, I noticed how many people had dropped everything to come straight to the unit. Hundreds of cars were blocking the entrance to the base, and dozens of soldiers were standing at the entrance, arguing with the guard to let them in. We all shared the same feeling. It didn't matter that we hadn't received a call up to reserve duty. We are taking part in this war. One of the HR officers tells me, "Listen, we don't have any more equipment to give you. We already have over 180% enlistment." I nodded at her in understanding, quickly parted from Shiran, went around the officer, and entered the base. I made sure to put my ranks on my uniform, hoping that being a lieutenant might somehow help me in the current situation. I started trying to gather equipment. I needed a vest, helmet, knee pads, and most importantly, a weapon. When I approached the warehouses, they told me, "Sorry, but we can't give anything out. You should go back home because you won't find any combat equipment here." A wave of frustration washed over me. The entire South was ablaze, and I wouldn't be able to take part in the fighting just because of some equipment shortage? I went to one of Duv Devan's special units, thinking I might be able to find a guy there with spare equipment. I bumped into Eitan Na'a, a good friend I hadn't seen in a while. I was very happy to see him. We chatted for a few minutes, and when I hugged him goodbye, I said with a smile, "Eitan, no silly business, okay? No shenanigans or playing the hero." Eitan smiled, and I continued racking my brain to work out where I could go to get equipment. Suddenly, an idea popped into my head. There's a building on the base called Duv Devan House, which is divided in two. One room dedicated to soldier commander meetings and debriefs, and the second part's entire purpose is to display our badass equipment and to raise funds for the unit. When I served in the unit, there had been a display mannequin that stood in the Duv Devan House, dressed like a combat soldier with all the latest models, vest, helmet, knee pads, gloves, and the pièce de résistance, tactical uniforms. In short, I rushed, all the while careful not to arouse suspicion, to the Duv Devan House to check if my memory had served me correctly, and indeed, to my delight, the mannequin was standing there wearing all the equipment. Pleased with myself and proud of my ingenious idea, I left the building with a full set of equipment. I glanced all around to make sure no one had caught me and headed towards the synagogue to inspect the equipment thoroughly. I was disappointed to discover that the mannequin's tactical helmet was made of plastic, but aside from the helmet, the rest of the equipment was excellent. Now all that was left to do was to sign for a weapon and find a team that would accept me. After all kinds of delays, I joined one of Duv Devan's reserve units. A few hours later, they gathered us together in the Duv Devan House to give an update on the situation and to set some order amidst all the chaos. Shiran and I sat next to each other. It was nice. The mannequin and I exchanged glances, keepers of a secret. "What's so funny?" Shiran asked curiously. "Nothing," I replied. "I'm just happy to be sitting here next to you." Shiran wouldn't have been too thrilled with the whole mannequin affair, and besides, the mannequin and I had a secret agreement. I couldn't betray it. We concluded the briefing, and I was getting my final pieces of equipment ready when suddenly I got a call from Yamini, a friend from the unit. "What's up, Kuno? Where are you?" I explained to him that I was at the base and seemed to have joined one of the commando squads. "Cut the bullshit!" Yamini shouts through the phone. "Come join the team! We're stationed under the 551st Brigade. They just called us up to the emergency depots in Bilu. We'd really love for you to join." He didn't need to persuade me too much. It felt natural to rejoin the team. I hadn't served with them since the end of the unit's training course, but of course, if there was a war, it could only be fought with my team. I signed off on the weapon and spoke to Shiran. Evening had already fallen. It was hard for her to think of me going with the team, and she was scared we'd end up fighting in Gaza. Something about me being by her side on the base had provided her with some peace of mind. I explained that I had to be there, that this was my place, and she had nothing to worry about. I gave her a hug. We said Havdalah together, a ceremony performed at the end of Shabbat and holidays, marking the end of the special day and the start of a regular one, and parted ways. As I left, I called Orr, my brother, who had also served in Duv Devan and who had been discharged just 2 months ago.
Orchuk, what's up? Where are you? Are you on your way to the unit? Were you called up?
Hey, Elka, how are you doing? Yes, I'm just getting to the base now. Damn, I can't believe I just missed you. What a bummer. Anyway, give my love to Shiran. It's nice that you two will be there together. Love you, brother. Take care of yourself.
I love you too, Elkush. Take care of yourself. And don't worry about Shiran. I'm here.
I typed Bilu Junction into Waze and headed towards the team. Nothing was clear in the chaotic situation we found ourselves in. I didn't know where terrorists might pop out from, so I drove wearing a vest and knee pads with an old helmet I found next to me and a handgun between my legs, ready for any trouble that might come my way. On the way, I remembered Saba Chaim. Every year I helped my grandfather build his sukkah after Yom Kippur, a hut that Jews eat and sometimes even sleep in during the holiday of Sukkot, and take down after Simchat Torah. I told myself I had to stop by his place in Mevaseret Zion and help him dismantle the sukkah. It would only take me a few minutes, and Mevaseret Zion is relatively on the route to Bilu anyway. At the time, I didn't fully understand the extent of what was happening on the Gaza border, so there was no reason not to stop by for a couple of minutes. Without any warning, I showed up at my grandparents' doorstep, dressed in army uniform and combat gear. Shavua Tov, I announced loudly. Literally, have a good week. This is the traditional greeting after Shabbat and holidays. My grandmother, seeing me coming in wearing uniform and gear, became emotional.
Nani, what are you doing here? She asked, surprised.
I was called up to Bilu, but I couldn't give up the honor of helping Grandpa with the sukkah, I replied.
Oh, Nani, you really don't need to. We'll manage it. We're so touched that you came.
You probably need to know Savta Bathsheva to understand that sentence in her intonation, but for me, hearing it was everything. Of course I'd stop by their house. It's truly an honor for me. Saba Chaim, who joined us in the living room, seemed surprised too. I told them, I don't have much time, so let's start taking down the sukkah. Within 10 minutes, I had taken down, packed up, and tied the skach, the roof of a sukkah, usually made of branches, bamboo, or leaves. The rest of the dismantling would be easy for Grandpa. I asked my grandparents for a blessing and went on my way. Grandma made sure to send me off with a heavenly glass of orange juice. Sweaty and pleased with the great privilege that had come my way, I drove towards Bilu. I took advantage of the time to make some calls. I called my mom, who was in the middle of an important conference in the United States. I knew it was still the holiday there, but it was important for me to tell her not to worry and that we were fine. I then spoke with my brother, Dvir, who served as a fighter in Egoz, an elite commando unit, and asked how he was. He told me that both he and Eden, his wife, were called up to reserves, Dvir to the north, and she to her special unit space. We really are a military family. I told him, too, how much I loved him and to take care of himself. I also managed to receive a blessing from my dad and to update Shiran's family that we were fine. It was only when I arrived at Camp Bilu, Camp Lipkin, that I understood the magnitude of the draft. A convoy of vehicles stretched several kilometers from the base
and thousands of people were there distributing food, treats, and other good things. I parked on the pavement in front of the bus station at the entrance to the base and entered on foot. I felt it had been a long time since I'd been in a place so crowded with people. Everyone was running around getting combat gear ready. It was as if the end of the world was near. Some of the guys were walking with a detached look in their eyes, but for others, it was a social gathering. Everyone was in their own world. Along the way, I bumped into many friends, praying for their safety. I try to imprint as many memories from each person as I can. I'm naturally optimistic, but something about this situation makes me start to worry about my friends. I'm not worried about myself. I told Shiran before leaving that everyone has a role and mission in the world, and until you fulfilled it, you stay here. I feel like I still have so much to do, so it's too early for me to go. At least that's what I tell myself, to instill some confidence in myself. I arrived at the battalion's depots, where I met the whole team. How exciting! It had been a long time since I'd seen them all. I already had most of the gear, so I only had to sign for a weapon. Time flies. It's very cold outside, and we don't have rooms to sleep in. Rotem, the company commander, gives us a company-wide briefing, and we get ready to sleep. Air Force planes are flying overhead. The sounds of bombings and Iron Dome interceptions can be heard constantly. It was a terrible night. I barely slept. A fear of war crept into me. It's here, and it's our turn this time. Nobody else will do it for us, and I'm not even sure I want anyone to switch with me. And so we entered a 3-week waiting period. The pre-battle period was accompanied by a spectrum of emotions: tears, happiness, anger, fear, power, mission. And the team simply knows how to contain it all. Everyone lends support and a shoulder, including you. Sometimes you're on top, sometimes below. One of the important things I realized during the pre-battle period is that often when you're in a stressful situation, say a call-up or mission, it's hard for you to function. You can find yourself staring at the gear, not knowing how to organize it. But it's very easy to help a friend. You can help them with the exact thing that you need, and what seems impossible for you becomes easy for a friend. I turned it into a rule. When it's hard for you, help others, and no less important, learn to ask them for help. This will make it much easier for you to cope. This state of war brings up a lot of thoughts and reminds you of the people who are truly important, even those you haven't seen for a long time. There were all sorts of people I met and got to know during the pre-battle period. I'm really glad I remembered them. I think the pre-battle period was a very important part of the fight. We were able to train a lot and sharpen our skills as fighters. From a professional perspective, I feel like a better combat soldier than I was in my mandatory service. Beyond that, it has made me a more collected and alert soldier. We had many more experiences and kind people who helped us with equipment, laundry, food, and anything we needed. Thanks to them, we entered the war with lots of strength, capabilities, and energy. So many things happened during the pre-battle period, but in order to write in real time, my 8th day in Gaza, I need to be concise. First Notebook. Battle, Beit Hanun. Sunday evening, the first day of battle, October 29th. 2023. First outing. Departure by bus from Bror Khail towards Or Haner, close to the strip. A good atmosphere, we sing on the bus together with the Atzitz unit. There's a great vibe, the driver is being a bit annoying. We arrive at Or Haner, from there we load up the equipment. I had a camping trolley that the Navot family had given us. I decided to attach the trolley to my belt.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?